Thank you. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors. Can everyone hear me back there? Thank you. I'd also like to acknowledge that some of the slides are drawn by work by other people, including Jürgen Rehm, Ed Adrath, and Thomas Baber. The four questions I'd like to answer are listed listed on the first slide, and there's going to be a test at the end to see whether I've answered those questions. First of all, I'm going to just provide a very quick snapshot of the surveys. One of the major resources I'm using in this talk are a number of surveys that have been conducted in Ontario over a number of years, over 25 years. And this, the details with regard to these surveys are listed in this slide. And then more recently, which will be the main focus of many of my slides, the last 10 years, a Ontario adult survey, which is conducted on a monthly basis through telephone surveys, and a two-stage probability sample, with sample size varying between 2,400 to 2,700, and response rates from 58 to 69%. So first of all, I'm going to just say a few words about the prevalence of alcohol use, and then the basic criteria is that respondents were asked whether they consumed an alcoholic beverage in the past 12 months, and you can see that it goes up and down somewhat, but it's roughly around 80%. There's also some difference, but not a huge difference between males and females in Ontario. Around just over 80%, 85% for males, and around 75 currently, or more recently, pardon me, for females. The next topic that I'm focusing on is average number of drinks. Now, you may think, well, that's very low, but that takes into account people who, per week. That takes into account the large majority who only drink very occasionally in the course of a year, as well as the people who drink at the other extreme who drink very frequently. So here you have a trend with regard to average number of drinks per week in the past 12 months, and you can see it's around about four drinks per week. And if you break it down by gender, there's quite a difference compared to prevalence of drinking. So you saw the prevalence of drinking was quite close, where in terms of average number of drinks, it's quite different between males and females. And as indicated in the last few data points, there seems to be an increase in average number of drinks, a modest increase in average number of drinks, particularly among females. There's also a variation by age, you can see that generally the younger age group have a slightly higher level of average number of drinks, the 40 to 49 also has an interesting pattern in the last few years. You can see that that's the red line with the X's that has been going up, the 50 to 69 seems to have gone down somewhat. So there's a closer bunching, if you will, in terms of average number of drinks per week by age. If we would have the gender in here, of course, you would see some separation by gender as well in here. So to summarize, the average number of drinks decreased between 92 to 96, and then started to increase in 97. 97 to 2005, the average number of drinks increased from 3.4 to 3.8. However, there was a significant increase among women, 2.6 in a 10-year period, among 40 to 49-year-olds from 2.8 to 4.3, and among those with less than high school education, there was a very substantial increase from 3.4 to 6.1 in 2005. So you have some variation over time, but in the last few years, there seem to be several sectors of the population where the average number of drinks per week has increased. Now I'm going to look at two measures of heavier drinking. One is they both use five drinks on a per occasion as the criteria, if you will. One is monthly, and the other one, that in a few slides later, will be weekly. So here you have the monthly heavy drinking in the past 12 months, the people who reported that they drank 5-plus per occasion, at least on a monthly basis. And you can see that that there was an interesting dip in 98. I'm not sure what happened there. And then there seems to be a leveling out and somewhat of an increase. So it goes from 24 to 30, which is a significant change in this 7-year period. Also, some difference by males and females, which is not surprising that we saw the difference with regard to average number of drinks. And so the went from 13 to 20 for females, and then also considerable variation in terms of monthly heavy drinking among those who did this at least in the past 12 months, 5-plus on per occasion. And the top line is the youngest age group. So the 18 to 29-year-olds had the highest percentage, saying that they drank at least 5-plus per occasion, at least monthly, in the past year. And from 40% to 53%, so you see an increase in the last 7 years on that. And for the 30 to 39, there's also an increase, 22 to 33%. And now turning to the other measure of heavy drinking, that is the percentage of respondents who indicated they drank 5-plus on a weekly basis. And here, the very interesting phenomena of the jump in 95 to 96. And you can see it goes from 7 to 12% and then to 11% and levels out there. And the again, similar theme as before, you can see that the males and females have fairly substantial differences in the percentage that say they drank 5-plus on occasion, at least on a weekly basis. The 11% there in 1991, and then goes to 19%, and then to 18%. So there's quite a big increase in 1995, and we're not sure about the explanation. I'm going to speculate about that at the end about what happened in 95 to 96. Furthermore, by age, you can see that probably one of the most interesting findings is that among 18 to 29-year-olds, you have a very large increase in the percentage who's reported drinking 5-plus on a weekly basis, at least on a weekly basis, if not more often. 11 to 21%, and then 22%, and then it goes up and down. So to summarize this part, there have been some trends and rates of monthly heavy drinking have decreased from 96 to 98 and then increased significantly from 24 to 30 in 2005, especially among women and among 18 to 29 years old. Rates remain stable between 77 and 95 but have increased significantly in 96 from 7 to 12% and have since remained at this level. These increases have been especially evident among men and 18 to 29-year-olds. Could I have some water? Another indication of drinking is what's a measure of the lowest drinking guidelines. These guidelines were developed about 10 years ago and using an analysis of epidemiological work, taking into account various types of risks from alcohol, both trauma and chronic disease, and also taking into account the benefits for cardiovascular from drinking smaller quantities such as one drink every other day. And they're currently under review at the national level in Canada, but you can see them here, no more than 2 standard drinks per day, up to 14 standard drinks per week, and up to 9 standard drinks for women. A standard drink is about a 12-ounce bottle of beer or a 5-ounce glass of wine or 1.5 ounce of spirits, distilled spirits. And so respondents were considered to have exceeded these guidelines if they report a total of 15 drinks or more for men and 10 or more for women or for both on a daily consumption exceeding this amount. So here you can see the trends. We didn't, these questions were not part of the earlier series, so we only have data for a few years, but you can see that there has been an increase, overall increase for men and women, some change by age, and also some change based on education level. Here's the one for men and women, and you can see the gradual increase in the last 3 years. Also the age group, and to summarize this part, 25% reported exceeding these guidelines, men at 2.3 times more likely than women. The rate was highest among those aged 18 to 29, which is not surprising given the other information I showed you about drinking five plus on a weekly or monthly basis. And the short-term trends, and again, this is very short-term, 2003-2005, there was an increase from 21 to 25%, and this was especially evident in this age group. Now, here's where it gets a little complicated, because we're not sure what can explain these developments, but one possibility has been that the alcohol sales have increased. Now, this graph is for a longer time period, but if you focus in on the last few points, you can see that that alcohol sale, total sales, which is a red line, has shown an increase, a gradual increase from about 96 onward. This is evident with regard to wine sales. Also, some evidence of spirit sales and beer sales stayed about the same. So, but the total sales of alcohol have been increasing during the time period when these surveys were conducted and the results that I just reported. The other thing that has happened has been that there has been a fairly dramatic and I think substantial deregulation and erosion of alcohol control and increase in alcohol marketing, and I've summarized, or we've summarized some of the key dimensions here. There's higher density of outlets, there's longer hours, and there's more diversification of the types of outlets. The goals of alcohol retailing have become increasingly to generate more revenue, and the often the most effective interventions are devalued or eroded, such as price or outlet density controls. There's also extensive marketing, and the stores, through the government stores, through the media, through the web, television, and through newspaper inserts and so on and so forth. And not any one of these may have much impact alone, but together they may have some impact on the situation, although we can't prove it at this point. Now, so the challenges of public health responses is the erosion of the control systems, the increase in alcohol marketing, and major are typically driven by market and retailing forces. This is combined, as I've indicated, with an increase in overall consumption, increase in high-risk drinking, and a large gap between the evidence of risk and damage and prevention practice. Some of you may have seen this slide or a version of the slide before. It shows the results of Tom Baber and colleagues in the book called Alcohol, an Ordinary Commodity. And what this slide illustrates is the assessment of different major interventions. A number were assessed, and you can see 3 stars indicates that it's very effective, or 3 X's, pardon me, that it's breadth of research support, that it's been tested widely cross-culturally, and then the cost to implement. And you can see that some interventions have been examined extensively and have been found to have been effective and been tested cross-culturally. And you can see that there's a number of interventions that actually focus on the drinking and driving arena. There's extensive literature on that. And so the possibility of finding effective interventions is expanded. And also there's extensive literature on school programs, but the evidence is that they're not very effective in changing drinking behavior, reducing high-risk drinking, or reducing damage from alcohol. They may be effective in changing perceptions or intentions, but not on behavior. In contrast, you can see that brief interventions have been shown to be effective, alcohol taxes and restrictions on outlet density, and so on. So this is a synopsis, if you will, of what are considered to be effective interventions. And here's the shopping list, if you will, of the best practices and practices with good support and feasibility, also based on this book. Here's an analysis of some of these interventions by Jürgen Riem and colleagues, and what was done was that they estimated the net savings of alcohol attributable mortality, years of life lost, and morbidity due to implementation of selected interventions in Canada. This is Canada, not Ontario, and based on 2002 data. And you can see that the increase of taxes by 25%, lowering of the BAC from 0.05 to 0.05, zero BAC for those under 21 years of age, raising the minimum legal drinking age, and safer bars, and so on and so forth, are assessed. You know, these are assessed to have an impact on reducing mortality, reducing years of life lost, and reducing acute care hospital days. And the bottom line gives the conservative estimate of the change between baseline and all interventions. And as indicated, then the privatization was excluded because the estimates represent an additional burden, not savings. So you can see that a number of these interventions that Baber and colleagues outlined can have a real potential in reducing mortality and reducing acute care hospital days, as indicated by this analysis. Now, I'd like to, in the last 2 minutes, just turn to drinking and driving to show a contrasting story. Here you can see what's happened with regard to percentage of drinking and driving in the past 12 months, decline. And here's what's happening with regard to males and females. I'm running out of time. 21 to 10, and gain for females as well. And also, deaths involving drinking and driving have declined during this time period. And percentage of all drivers in serious crash incidents have also declined. And the percentage with a higher BAC has also declined. So you can look at the top bar. That has also declined during this time period. So there has been a decrease in reporting of driving in the past year, a decrease in crashes, and dose can make a difference. If you have a multi-dimensional control strategies based on evidence with strong community support, and involving substantial resources, you can reduce drinking-related problems as indicated in the drinking and driving arena. So my last few slides. There appears to be a combination of increase in average drinks, increase in the percent drinking in a high-risk manner, increase in drinking above the lowest drinking guidelines, increase in sales, increase in alcohol marketing. This will strengthen the demand for access for alcohol, and on balance, the current alcohol promotion and management in Ontario is likely to result in harm promotion rather than harm reduction. And with these changes, we can likely expect an increase in damage in the coming years as well, the increase in costs. So my last slide, I think an effective response needs to focus on two particularly important dimensions. One is overall consumption and high-risk drinking, an increase in a real price, a ceiling on the types of availability, a reduction in alcohol marketing, particularly that attractive to youth, an increase in access to brief interventions, and using the lessons from drinking and driving control experience as a model for other types of interventions. And finally, strong NGO community and government support for the most effective interventions. Thank you very much for your attention. You can find some reports on our website, some of the ones I mentioned.